And a good Monday morning to you, and welcome into 3D here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Hope everybody had a great weekend. I feel like everybody got snow in the country but us. I mean, not like everybody, but I feel like we all have friends or relatives in certain places, whether it's Texas or Georgia or, I mean, pick a place. Buffalo.
I got a little bit of Buffalo.
And they're getting snow, and we didn't get a flake here. I mean, not a flake. I don't know if that's a good thing or bad
thing. Are you complaining?
I guess it depends on who you are. I don't mind a little here, a little there for a small window. That's what I hated about the North or the Northeast. I mean, all those regions. It just beats you down for so long. I just hated how long it goes on. But a little window, like we're in that window. It's December. I'm okay with it. It's the holidays. So I'm okay with it. I didn't say a foot or what did Buffalo get? I mean,
2 feet.
2 feet of snow. I mean, I'm not saying 2 feet. But you told me before the show, Willie, that you went to a sports bar just to watch.
Oh, yeah.
The Bills and the Colts.
It was such an amazing phenomenon because two reasons. You know, the Titans game wasn't on until 3. Locally, we only had one game on. It was the Giants and the Cowboys, which once upon a time, back in my childhood, that was a big game. And the Giants were wearing the throwback uniforms that I grew up watching, so that was pretty cool. But my son and I were just sitting around the house. We were going to be there all day. And I said, you know what? We started seeing these tweets of people shooting on their camera phone, just the downpour of snow in Buffalo. So it was getting close to the half, and I said, well, let's just go grab something to eat. Let's go to a sports bar and watch the rest of this game. Also, we would be able to watch our fantasy teams play. He's really into his team. It's crunch time in our league. You know, Chase and I are going for a championship. How's your team doing, by the way?
I'll get in the playoffs.
Okay, so we might meet again.
That's about it.
Okay. We need a big night, Willie. That's all I can say.
Yeah, we got Mr. Brady going. But nonetheless, I really wanted to watch that game. That is one of the most crazy games I've ever watched. It was so entertaining to watch those two teams try to deal with the elements. Because it wasn't just a little snow. People, when they were standing, lining up for each play, this is why it was worth watching the whole game and not just watching the highlights. People's ankles, you could not see their shoes in the snow. They were having a kick like a bull, you know, just trying to scrape down so they could get their cleats on anything. The defensive ends had no chance when they were rushing. They couldn't get any leverage. And so Frank Gore had 36 carries. The best play you could call, I think, was like a shotgun to the quarterback. Everybody go for a pass and just have the quarterback run.
Or a play to Jack Doyle. That seemed to work.
So the Bills score at the end of the first half. They figure out a way. They throw a couple of passes down the sideline to Benjamin. He scores. They make the extra point. It's 7-0. Extra points, of course, are incredibly tough. Nathan Peterman slides into the snow. His body completely disappears. The snow is going everywhere, and a guy jumps on him with his head and gives him a concussion. So now they're down to their third-string quarterback, Joe Webb, who's been around forever. And everybody's saying the same thing on Twitter. I didn't realize this guy was still in the league.
Mm-hmm.
I thought he was a wide receiver now.
And then the Colts, who have nothing to play for, you know, they could have just said, forget this, man. Let's just run the
Their coach has got a lot to play for. His job.
They could have just said, man, this ain't happening. This is brutal. Nobody should be playing in this. They engineer a 19-play drive all the way down the field in the final minutes, in the fourth quarter, and score a touchdown at 7-6. They go for two in the driving snowstorm, figuring they got just as much of a chance of getting the 2 points than kicking the extra point. So they run a pick play, and they get it, and it looks like they're going to win. I don't know where you would find a flag on the field, because when the guy threw the flag, you could never see it. It just disappears into the snow. And this, it was coming down so hard, you could literally see the flag just start to get buried as soon as he threw it. But it took forever for the TV people to even figure out they threw a flag. It was this long delay, and they wave off the touchdown for or the two-point conversion for offensive pass interference. And when you watch, the guy did sort of – he just stopped and blocked the guy. If he'd have just done anything, it would have been a brilliant play, and the Colts would have won 8-7. Instead, now they have to try to kick the extra point from like 40 yards out.
43, yeah, I believe. 40,
yeah, so it's way out there. So the Colts immediately start digging. They call their last timeout. They start digging away the snow, just try to scoot, you know, with their cleats, just trying to swipe as much out of there. Adam Vinatieri and the holder and every player on the extra point team. They're just trying to dig like a bunch of husky dogs, right? The people coming out with the water bottles and stuff, they start trying to sweep snow out of there, and the referees push them out. Hey, you're not allowed to do that. Only the players can do that. Remember way back in the early 80s, the snowplow?
Mm-hmm.
Of course, they're the road team, so there's no snowplow coming. So it's got to be a manual thing. They clear out this space, and Vinatieri, the wind is howling, right? And he makes it. It's the most incredible extra point I've ever seen. He starts at about 5 to 10 yards outside of the post because the wind's blowing, and hooks back in like you would not believe. And so it goes to overtime. And
well,
you're
Adam Vinatieri is used to big kicks in snow. I mean, he's kind of made a living out of that.
But that one in New England all those years ago, the Tuck Rule game, that was a piece of cake compared to this one.
Yeah.
So it goes to overtime. And the Bills actually punted a ball when they had 4th and 1, and they got all kinds of flack from their fans. What are you thinking, punting the ball? Because it looked like they were playing for the tie, but it worked. They got the ball back, and Shady McCoy finally busted one, and they scored. It was incredible. It was an amazing game. Even though those two teams aren't great teams, that was just a phenomenal football game to watch. Phenomenal.
I'm glad you found that much satisfaction.
It was
in
incredible.
That game.
I couldn't, and maybe I was the only guy. And the sports bar was pretty crowded, but everybody was watching. But they were more into, you know, this patch of Chiefs fans is over here. The Cowboy fans are over here. I'm just sitting there going, I can't believe this. But
well,
I was kind of like on the island.
It's fun when you're at home or somewhere warm watching. It's not fun when you're in the stands. I've done those games. I've done a game in Buffalo. In 1995, when the Vikings came in there with Warren Moon at the end of the year, and it was a blizzard the entire game, kind of like that. It maybe wasn't to that level, but it was very close. It's not fun. I don't care what people say. It's not fun when you're in the stands. I did the same thing in Cleveland. I remember a mid-90s game against San Diego. Anthony Miller won the game for the Chargers over the Browns in a blizzard the entire game. Remember Anthony Miller?
Sure.
I believe that would have been, St. Humphreys. That was probably right around that. It may have been the 94 team that went to the Super Bowl.
That was the year they went.
That 94 team? I think so. It's not fun.
I was
it's
amazed.
It's fun to watch. It's fun to laugh at in your home or in a sports bar. It's not fun in the stands.
I haven't read to see how many fans stayed there, but there were an amazing amount. Like, number one, just to be able to get there in that weather. And then there were some great pictures that you see of the people just covered with snow. And, of course, when they won the game, everybody was just firing snow up into the air. It was a great sight. Good. There was one play where the Bills sacked Jacoby Brissett, and as a celebration, they just started picking up snowballs and throwing them at each other. of a kind.
Just have a little fun as a player.
I've seen snow games. That was a new level of anything I've ever seen. There was a Monday night game.
Do you not remember the Philadelphia game a couple years ago against Detroit where you couldn't even see it?
Yeah.
Like you could not see the broadcast. It was just white.
Yes. I was with the Predators on a road trip, and we took a train from Washington to New York, and we went right through that snowstorm, right through Philadelphia on the train station while that game was going on. So, yeah, that was. I think that this one was worse, though. That one in Philadelphia, if I remember correctly, was a hard downpour early, and then it kind of stopped, and it still affected the game the rest of the way. This was a downpour of snow the entire game. that never, it just never stopped.
It was a sight to see for sure.
You couldn't see the Colts. They had the white uniforms on. All you could you just barely see the numbers. And when a guy would go into the snow, there was one guy that tried to catch one in the back of the end zone, the Colts. And he caught it, but he was out of bounds. It was barely
how you would know that.
But he went into a snowbank and he just completely disappeared. The snow just went flying up, and all you could just see part of his shoulder pad.
Well, I like Jack Doyle's spike. The ball just disappeared. He just
the punts. They kept punting it, and it just would poof, right in the snow.
It's like dig it out.
Dig it out. Guys would try to make cuts on kickoff returns or punt returns, and they would just slide. They couldn't. Their cleats wouldn't grab. They just wipe right out.
Let's go to Art Paducah, a.k.a. Pat Sperduto. Good morning, Art, or is it Pat?
It's Pat. What's going on?
Pat, have you ever – I know you've been around football your whole life. What's the craziest weather game you've ever been a part of?
I played a game in college, and it was 32 below zero wind chill factor.
Woo!
And we had a running back. His name was Ed Crispin. I'll never forget it. And he was like, he had 3% body fat, and they literally had to rush him to the hospital because he was going to freeze. That's like hypothermia set in during the game.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now that's cold.
Below zero wind chill, and I'll never, because our stadium was right on the water, so we had in Massachusetts, you're right on the water, so you're getting the winds off the water, and it was miserable. It was miserable.
Well, the coldest game, I was thinking more like snow, the elements, but the coldest game for me is, without a doubt, the Titans playoff game in Foxborough, in New England. That was the coldest game I've ever been a part of, and that was me just walking from the car in the parking lot to the press box, which was enclosed. So I don't really have any room to talk about how cold it was, but I was out in it, and I don't know how they made it through that game. It was impossible.
I'll tell you a story about that one. Hotz, our equipment guy who with the Titans, he gave us all, the coaching staff, we all had these thermal, super thermal boots that were like specially made by this boot company to be super warm and all that. So we put the boots on for pregame, and I was up in the press box during the game, but I had to go out there in pregame. So I get out there, and, we're going through pregame warm-up, and we come in, and all of a sudden I look down at the boots, and the boots had exploded. That's how cold it was in New England that day. I was like, I thought these things were supposed to be special. The press box, which was heated, was still freezing. So we got, like, winter, if you guys, Floyd is on there. Ask Floyd about that. Floyd was in the press box with us. It was freezing, and we were indoors in heat.
Yeah, it was. Remember they showed one person, that's the times when you want the follow-up story. They showed one cat during the course of that game on the Jumbotron, and he didn't have a shirt on. And I was like, I'd love to see him on Monday morning when he's in bed and he's probably about to die from pneumonia.
Has long passed because I guarantee he has a lot of alcohol in his body.
One would think so.
Extended period of time alcohol, too, I guarantee you.
Willie will remember this. We had on – Neil O'Donnell came in studio that following week after that game. Willie, do you remember this? And I asked him – remember, Steve McNair could barely even move or walk in the fourth quarter. I mean, I don't even know how he was still out there. And I asked Neil O'Donnell, I said – Did you think you were going in? Did you want to go in? Steve was really struggling. I mean, he was obviously hurt. And Neil looked at me. This was on air. He goes, "Are you out of your mind? I hadn't felt the bottom half of my body in two quarters."
Can you imagine?
There's no way
in.
I could have gone out there.
You know, what they always use, Pat, is that expression, the announcers, "Boy, he's ice cold. He's coming in ice cold." Now, that's literally ice cold, though. I mean, you barely can get your body moving. If you've been sitting on the bench the whole game.
Rule with the linemen, the offensive linemen. I worked with, O-line and Mike Lunchak in our group. So whatever you wore the first preseason game on your arms, so like if you wore long sleeves on your arms, you could wear long sleeves the whole season. You'd have to wear it every single time. So if you wore no sleeves in the preseason during the summer when it's 85, 90 degrees for a preseason game, you had to wear the same thing every single game. So come game time in New England, I was like, man, I bet you guys are all thinking back to that preseason game when you wish you put on long sleeves, huh? And they all walked out there with no sleeves on.
And they did not wear sleeves. I remembered. I've talked to Brad Hopkins about that. They did not wear sleeves.
It was a set rule. Munch had that rule that you guys, if you wear sleeves, you can wear them all year. No sleeves means no sleeves forever.
This is a perfect segue. As we know, the weather is very, very cold right now in our city. I mean, our high today is going to be what? Just above freezing. I mean, it's going to be in the 30s. I mean, it's cold, and so we need your help. And Pat's been doing this a long time, and so I'm going to kind of turn it over to you, Pat. But we need the listeners to show up to Corner Pub in Brentwood and help us out because we're depending on them to go help others on Christmas morning.
Yeah, 710 Old Hickory Boulevard in Brentwood. If you're coming down 65, you get off and you go the second Old Hickory exit. It'll be right on the left-hand side when you swing around, and it's Corner Pub. And Yogi and his staff are there. They're waiting for you guys to drop off some gloves, some coats, blankets, sleeping bags, new socks, whatever you can give. We are so grateful that you give it. And on Christmas Day, the Donicks and the McFarlands and the Warrens, we're all going to go out there and we're going to distribute all of the things that are donated to help homeless people on Christmas morning. It's all going to go to somebody who needs it a lot more than us. And they turned out so well last year. And right now I'm just hoping that people kind of just say, okay, I'm going to do that tonight. I'm put it together, and tomorrow I'm going to drop it off for lunch over at the Corner Pub and make sure it all goes to somebody who needs it more than me this Christmas.
They know you're coming, so please just go to Corner Pub in Brentwood on Old Hickory Boulevard. Anything, coats, gloves, shirts, anything that would keep somebody warm, socks.
It'll all get used, I guarantee you.
Yes.
And it is a great feeling knowing that, you know, it sounds like something little, and it's little to some people, but it is huge for these people. And Willie knows, and Aaron, his wife, and, of course, Lauren got a chance to taste it. And the kids are our kids that go out there and help us. You know, it gives – they know. They know how badly these people need it. And every little bit's going to help. And we appreciate it greatly that your listeners have come to the plate and helped us and stepped in. So I can't thank everybody that listens to your show enough.
And the great folks at Corner Pub Brentwood, they provide meals too, which is really nice. Not only do they house all these clothes until Christmas morning, they're going to distribute a ton of food that we're going to have along with the clothes. So they're going to get a meal and clothes on Christmas morning.
Those guys are really the MVPs because they start at like 6 in the morning and they're putting them all together and bagging them up and boxing them up. Yogi and Jeff have an army in there. And they just go at it, and we can't, you know, again, we can't thank those people enough for taking their Christmas morning out, and Gary and Jenny Gwynn, their family, they bring there, and they help put it all together. And like I said, we're just grateful that everybody gets involved to give us a hand. And the listeners last year, the way they responded, Darren, I thought that was incredible. I mean, they stepped up to the challenge, and they started dropping off bags of coats and blankets and sweatshirts and sweaters and gloves, and every bit of it was used. And again, we just thank them for stepping up to the challenge, and we hope they do the same this year.
No doubt. I did a surprise visit on December 23rd last year. I just popped in there because I wanted to see, and I was blown away at how many bags of clothes and stuff were sitting there at Corner Pub in Brentwood. So we need your help once again. You've responded in the past. We certainly could use that again this year. And it's going to get used, as Pat said. It will get used Christmas morning to everybody downtown, the homeless folks that don't have some of the stuff that we have. They do not have the same luxuries. And they're not afforded what we are. I mean, we take for granted. So, and you brought up, I mean, Maddox, that's all he knows. He knows that this is what we do to start off Christmas morning. So I want him to see that and understand how lucky he is.
Yeah, there's an element of gratitude and humbleness that you acquire when you do something like this, and you realize how lucky you are. But just as much, you realize how grateful they are that somebody cares enough to take time out. So, you know, and like you said, the city keeps growing and growing, and obviously with that, unfortunately, comes the homeless population grows as well. So, you know, it's our obligation as good Nashvillians to go out and help out.
Pat, we'll keep getting the word out. Thanks, as always. We'll talk to you here real soon.
You guys are the best. Thanks, Darren. Thanks, Lily.
Thanks, Pat.
That is Pat Sperduto. Was with the Titans for a long time, was two-time Cats head coach when there was arena football in this city, and now he's a Chiefs scout. He's been with them for a long time. He's been in the NFL for, what, almost 20 years?
Well, it's been a long time
right?
now, yeah.
But sure could use your help. Corner Pub Brentwood on Old Hickory Boulevard.
Just take a minute, go through your stuff, grab some warm stuff that you don't need anymore, long sleeve T-shirts, anything that you think might be in good enough shape to where somebody could wear it and stay warm with it. Take it on down to the Corner Pub in Brentwood, and you'll have done a really good deed. We'll get it out to the right people.
Willie, we will come back and delve headfirst into the Titans game in Arizona.
Okay.
So get ready.
I'm ready.
I probably should say buckle up. I don't know if it's going to be bumpy or not. I suspect there's a chance it gets bumpy. But first, you've got a word about Lee Company.
Okay, let me tell you about Lee Company. 567-1000 is the phone number. Now, there might be some odds and ends during the holiday season that you need maintenance on. Lee Company can help you with that. I've talked a lot over the last several years about their heating, their cooling, their electrical, their plumbing service. They've got all that. So if you need a plumber, all of that stuff, call Lee Company. But just general maintenance as well. If you've got some odds and ends that need fixing up, maybe you got a door that's not closing properly, you've got some things, maybe the heat is working well, but you've got a door that's cracked and or a window that's not closing properly and the cold air is coming in. Those are the kind of things that can really be nagging. Help us on the way with Lee Company, so just give them a call at 567-1000. They're a proud sponsor of the Nashville Predators. You can make an online appointment at home or at work by going to LeeCompany.com. It's Lee Company. They do great work. Let their decades of expertise go to work for you. It's Lee Company.
You know what? We should have got it. I thought we had it. Both officials had the mark as a first down. I was standing right behind them. I don't know how it got overturned, especially when most of those times that play with all the bodies, I don't know how they saw that. I still don't. I think I question that immensely, that overturn.
Mike Mularkey talking about the fake punt midway through the third quarter, which they initially gave to the Titans as a first down, and then Arizona challenged the spot, Bruce Arians, and they won the challenge.
Big play.
And that led to a field goal for Arizona. Yet again, the defense coming up big for the Titans against a crappy Arizona offense, and they held them to a field goal. It didn't cost them too much, but that was a huge play in the game midway through the third quarter. Now, I will say this, Willie, you know I've been pretty consistent about Mike Mularkey, the onside kick to start a game or going for it. I mean, he's done some wacky stuff. Stuff that you don't see most times around the league. And that's okay. He goes against the grain a little bit when it comes to surprise attack. I don't have a problem with it. I never have. I have supported the decisions, whether they get them or not. You
right.
know that.
Yeah, absolutely.
But this one, I'm perplexed. Like, I don't understand. It doesn't make any sense to me why what is the benefit from that play other than you keep a drive alive? You're not doing it at your own, at their 35. Okay. Where if you turn it over, okay. Well, or if you convert it, you're already kind of in field goal range. You're really, really close to being in field goal range, if not already. You're at your own 35. To me, the risk was not worth the reward, because if you don't get it, like they did, you now give Arizona golden opportunity. They're taking over at the 35, and this one I don't understand. Like, to me, this one did not make any sense. I don't want to be critical of these type of decisions, because if this is what you are, I'm okay with it. I wasn't okay with, I felt like he backpedaled in the press conference. That's another thing. If you're going to do it, own it. Own it no matter whether you make it or not. I felt like he was kind of questioning himself after the game. Don't question yourself. Then you weren't doing the right thing. If you're questioning your call afterwards, then you didn't make the right decision.
Yeah, I have to say, I like the aggressiveness of Mike Mularkey. I enjoy that they will do that from time to time. But yeah, that one was questionable. I have to say, the way their defense had played, the way the Cardinals' offense, although the Cardinals' offense finally had broken through and had a nice drive before that, you hate to give them the ball right back. But the way Brett Kern can flip the field, and the way, and I, you know, it's interesting. I had just tweeted out how impressed I have been, and it sort of gets taken for granted. Remember last year, their kick coverage was a disaster, total disaster. They fired the special teams coach in the middle of the, that's a distant memory now. They cover kicks well, even though Arizona has a dangerous punt returner. But right there, yeah, your percentages of getting it are good, but I felt like there was a little frustration that they didn't get the third and one on the play before that, and they weren't even close.
Is that the one where Derrick Henry?
He bounced it outside. He tried to turn the corner, but there was nothing there. I mean, they couldn't block it up.
Derrick Henry is not a bounce outside guy, runner. He's not.
I think he is.
I don't think he is.
I think he's fast enough to do that. He's had some great plays on that, but when you look at the end zone camera, he had no choice. There were two guys waiting for him.
Yeah.
He just tried to outrun him. That was the only choice that he had on that one. But that was tough. Now, I do have a question with this.
I don't know why he – tell me how you felt about Mike Mularkey in the clip questioning how they could overturn that. I never saw anything that showed me that he was even close to getting the first down.
I agree
with you. I didn't think he was even close.
When they first showed the play live, I said to myself, oh –
Not even close.
I thought they were going to come right in and motion first down for the Cardinals. I couldn't believe. I thought it was some sort of sleight of hand how they marked it. Because when they measured it, I was like, how in the world did they get that? They didn't gain any yards on that. But having said that, Mike Mularkey does have a point on one thing. They took forever to look at that thing. Okay? There was never a look that showed you where the ball was. True. Eric Weems disappeared into the pile. You couldn't see the ball. And I tweeted this at the moment, so I'm not coming this retroactively. If it takes that long, how can it be conclusive when you can't see the ball, even if they screwed up the mark? We've seen this happen before. Hockey is an example. If you can't see the puck across the line, you cannot rule a goal, even though you might say, you know, that puck's probably across. It's under bodies, and I saw it over here last time I saw the puck. It's reasonable to assume it's over here now, but I can't see it. How many times have we seen that? You could not see that conclusively, but somewhere in New York or somebody said, you know what, he didn't gain any yards on that play. So that was a questionable overturn. I was very
because
curious.
He should have never gotten the first down to begin with. But you're right. But they awarded him the first down.
It was a bad spot.
It was a bad spot. But how could you really tell in the challenge? Because there's bodies there. I mean, you can't really tell where the ball is.
Yes.
I thought it was a bad spot to begin with. I didn't think he was ever close.
It wouldn't be the first time that a team benefited from a bad spot of the ball. But that being said, you know, the reality is he didn't gain any yards on that play.
No.
So I have mixed emotions on that. But I think he has a point that if you can't see it, I do question the replay system.
The way your defense is playing at the time, it's what, 7-3?
7-3.
Middle of the third quarter. The way your defense is playing, you're going against Blaine Gabbert. You've been sacking him all day. The Arizona Cardinals are running Kerwin Williams. I mean, that's their running back. Kerwin Williams. Why would you like I said, I don't like to question. I'm okay with being a little bit of a gambler. I'm okay with it. I've never questioned any of the stuff that people have questioned. Starting off the game with an onside kick, I've been okay with it. But this one just to me made no sense. Where it's at in the game, You're in control. You're leading. Why would you? Because if you don't, you can't assume you're going to get it. You can't. You would like to believe you're going to get it. That's why you're doing it. But if you don't, why would you turn the ball over and give them good field position? I mean, it just, to me, there was no reward for that risk. None. Okay, so you get it. You're still you're at the 36, your own 36. I mean, you still have a long ways to go. What are you trying to accomplish other than chewing up the clock?
I still
keeping
think
the drive alive?
Despite that, I agree with you. But they still had many opportunities to win the game after that, which I'm sure we're getting to. It just is amazing to me how the offense could not come up with anything better. The one question I do have, and this is what we will not know, is how much was Mariota affected by getting twisted around? And if you look at that play, he did get twisted around pretty bad on that second run that he had, and he had no rushing attempts after that. But it just is baffling how they cannot come up with other ways to score against a decent defense. And Arizona does have a pretty decent defense. They're pretty good at stuffing the run. We talked
Chandler
about it on
Jones
Friday.
Chandler Jones is ridiculous.
They have very good pass rushers when you get them pinned back. But I just, this offense, I thought had more answers. Corey Davis, not seeing him. Rishard Matthews back in there. I don't know if he's just not 100%, but they went into a shell, and they just couldn't get anything done.
It's been really
frustrating.
If anything, it's been consistent. It's been consistently bad all year. It really has. It hasn't been that great all year.
It hasn't been that bad. 7 points.
They didn't score a touchdown in Cleveland. They won 12-9 in overtime.
Yeah, but for the most part,
Do you remember the offense in Miami? I mean, they've had some really, really bad games.
We know what the deal was in Miami. But, I mean, number eight did not play in that
I understand.
Game. But usually, at least at home, and even in some games on the road, they've been able to piece together a couple of good drives. And the real dagger was after it was 7-6, the offense comes back with a pretty good drive, right? One of their only drive of the second half, the only one. But they're in great position. They pick up a nice third down to Delanie Walker. They're sitting first and 10 on the 27, up 7-6. And then I have no idea what happened on the Rishard Matthews misread with Marcus Mariota. They just weren't on the same page. That was a killer.
Okay.
Just a killer.
Just to explain this to me. Help me understand how those two cannot be on the same page.
It just can't happen.
Rishard Matthews is a veteran in the league. Okay. He's not a rookie. He's not Corey Davis. If we want to talk about the Taywan Taylor play, okay. That's why we've seen less and less of Taywan Taylor this year. Prime example. That's just a rookie that hasn't picked up everything yet. Rishard Matthews is a veteran in the league. He's their best receiver. He is their best receiver for two straight seasons. He's been in the system. How can him and Mariota not be on the same page? How does that happen?
Tough.
Tell me if that's Taylor running down the field or Corey Davis, who's barely played because of all the injuries. Okay, it's pretty easy to chalk it up. Miscommunication, rookie receiver with his quarterback. Rishard Matthews, how do you explain that? By the way, who's at fault? Mariota. Is it Mariota?
He put it on him. But Neil O'Donnell put the interceptions in the Super Bowl he threw on him, where a lot of people tell you it was the receiver that
cut
the wrong way. It always
that's what
makes
quarterbacks.
The quarterback
Steve McNair did the same thing.
He would always take the bullet. But either way, how could at this level,
Mariota's in his third year, Rishard Matthews is a veteran, or is it the coaches? I mean, somebody's at fault because that should not happen. That sequence should not happen with those players. So who's at fault for it being that bad? I mean, that was a huge play.
I think it's a reflection of, you know, Matthews has been out for a couple of weeks. Mariota has missed a lot of practice time. He's missed some games. Maybe this is just the culmination of an offense not gelling. I'm trying to grasp for straws here.
Is it the players or is it the coach or coaches?
Oh, I think it's got to be more of the players because it just has not gelled together. Do I hope for? Remember, Derek early in the season was saying, I would take last year's wide receivers over this year's. I was like, you got to be kidding me, man. This is way better, potentially way better. Unfortunately, he's right. They have not gelled to where now any critical play, you just feel like if it's not Delanie Walker, nobody's able to come up with a clutch catch. Decker every now and then. Matthews was. They've got to have Rishard Matthews come back and be clutch for them down the stretch if they're going to have any chance in these last three games. San Francisco's not an easy gimme anymore. Garoppolo gives them a shot. They have an offense that's decent now. That's
not a gimme. They've won 3 of 4. They're undefeated with him at quarterback.
Yes. And then the last two we know are going to be dogfights. They're here. And honestly, I looked at the Titans, and we said this a few weeks ago, after they lost to the Steelers. We looked at the next four. They were 8-4 going into this game. I had a feeling that they were not going to be able to win all four of the games lined up, even though it looks great on paper. Hey, they should win all four. The truth is they're just not that good, right? We've always suspected that.
I've said it all year.
But even if with this mulligan, the disappointing thing is Arizona's not very good. You know, you hate walking off the field saying that team beat you. You thought you should be good enough to win. Even with things not going 100% right, that game was so winnable. Just like the Dolphins game. Those two are killing them right now and keeping them from being in an unbelievable position. But the reality is they're not a great team right now. They have to execute better, and they were playing without Taylor Lewan for most of the game. Mariota, I guess, was affected. I mean,
they're not good right now, they're going into week 4. Well, I guess it's technically week 15 with the bye weeks.
They have three games to play.
Going into week 15 of the NFL season. I mean, you think that all of a sudden, yay, now, okay, guys, now. They played 13 games. When they're not good right now, how is it going to change now? There's three games left in the season. This is what they've looked like all year. How can we possibly expect this to be different in the final three games?
Because in the NFL, you see games like this. You have baffling games where you sit there and go, how the Chiefs bounce back and they won yesterday. They lost to both the New York teams. The Jets looked horrendous yesterday. How bad have the Broncos looked the last few weeks? And they shut the Jets out. The Jets put up, 30-something points against the Chiefs and beat them? It's a weird deal. You can have weeks like that. So you got to clear it. You still got three games to play. There's a lot to play for, even with Jacksonville winning. And Jacksonville is probably going to win the next two. They have very winnable games coming up here. But if you can stay within a game, you could still play for the division on your field in the last game of the season. And if you lose, you still got a heck of a shot to be a wild card, thanks to the Steelers pulling it out last night. The Ravens were about to pull that off and get very much into the wild card discussion. They still might be.
Raise your hand if you thought the whole time the Steelers will find a way.
Oh, yeah.
Because they're one of those teams.
They are one of those teams.
It's what we've talked about. It's just one of those. They have a knack. The Patriots, Steelers, there's just certain teams. When you have Aaron Rodgers in there, the Packers, you go, yeah, they'll find a way to win. That's what they do. They'll find a way to win. They were playing catch-up the whole game. Were they not?
Sure.
And they still found a way to win. It's unbelievable. Let's go to Jason and Brentwood. Jason, what's up?
Hey, guys. If the window was ever there for the Titans to make it to the playoffs, it's this year with all the injuries in the AFC South and quarterbacks being out. I predicted it starting way back when, but I'm going to lean towards the Titans the next game slightly. But they lose the final two games, and they're going to be standing at 9-7, and they're going to need help to get into the playoffs. They're very thankful that Pittsburgh pulled it off last night to help a little bit. But this team is just, there's nothing in sync about this offense. I feel sorry for the defense because they played their butts off last night and had absolutely zero help from Mariota. He throws so many ducks in a game, it just drives me crazy. Anytime he tries to put anything on the ball, it's up, it's down, it's behind, it's too far in front, and it's wobbling. There are no tight spirals on the ball, and it's just driving me nuts to see a professional quarterback to throw as many ducks as he does spirals.
I see what you did there, Jason. Throwing ducks. Mariota throwing ducks. That's good. That's good. Thank you. Oregon quarterback. Ducks. Nice.
Here's another point that Derek has made many times, and he's absolutely right. And I thought it would be different. And again, I would like to know more about how Mariota, his mechanics are being affected by these nagging injuries that he's got. But they cannot challenge anybody down the field. They don't. You can see the Cardinals creeping up,
of course,
tightening up on the short intermediate routes, and they never took a shot down the field. Never.
By the way, he's exactly right. That's another thing, bringing up the Pittsburgh. That's a huge victory for the Titans.
Absolutely.
Huge victory that the Ravens gagged that away last night.
Definitely. Definitely.
I mean, the Ravens would be sitting here today 8-5, the same record. Now, they would have the loss of the head-to-head matchup, but they would have the same record as the Titans right now.
And the Raiders.
And I haven't looked at their schedule.
The Raiders losing to the Chiefs was important, too.
Yep. Well, because somebody had to lose, though. I mean, they
sure,
were both
but the Raiders
the same
have
record.
The head-to-head. The Raiders have the head-to-head over the Titans, so you'd rather have the Chiefs win that.
We'll come back and wrap up the first hour of 3D next.
Frustration's an understatement. Defense played lights out. Special teams did their job. I've been hurting our team, and I got to find ways to get better and improve on it.
Marcus Mariota after the 12-7 loss to the Cardinals yesterday. I am curious. We'll probably take a number of calls today. And you know that I've been consistently saying on the show, I get it. You're winning. It's a W. And I know that's what the players and the coaches are going to say. It's hard to win in the NFL. A win is a win. I get all that. And people have been okay with it. But I've been saying there is a way to look at wins and losses. I've been very consistent over the years. You can't just look at the standings and say that's what a team is. You can't actually rate them on the eyeball test. Sometimes teams lose really, really close games. Sometimes teams lose games like Ken Whisenhunt when he was the coach where they lose 38-7 and their record is absolutely what they are. They're just a bad football team. But sometimes it's heartbreak city. And that's not really, your record may show 4-8, but you may have three losses by 3 points or less. And so you're not really a 4-8 team. Well, conversely, the same thing works on teams who are doing a lot of winning. You can look really good, and everybody can say you're legit, or you can be kind of a fraud because you've been given a nice schedule or things have worked out for you where it's played out nicely. And that is the case here. But I wonder if for all the people who've been defending, hey, a win is a win. Take it however you can get it. I wonder if they feel the same today. Because now this is a different level. When you keep pulling them out, it's hard to get mad, right? But then when you lose to a bad football team, but you've been playing the exact same way all year, but you've just found a way to win, I wonder if the narrative changes for that fan that has felt that way today.
Realistically, after they lost to the Steelers and the next four were at Indy, Houston at home, at Arizona, at San Francisco, I thought to myself, I don't think they're good enough to win all four, even though it's lined up tremendously in terms of a favorable schedule. I thought they would drop one, and I thought the most likely one was yesterday. The problem was the way it happened yesterday, you felt, you know, they're up 7-0. They've played better in second halves of late. You thought, okay, if you can widen that lead a little bit. The defense has done a great job against limited offenses. I give them a lot of credit. Let's be honest. They've shut down limited offenses, but they've done a great job. They held Larry Fitzgerald to 44 yards. They had 8 sacks. You know, they, for the most part, they were, until they started to get worn down at the end of the game, they were stopping the run. They were just put in a horrible position. The defense has done a tremendous job. They've overachieved. It's the offense that continues to be the question mark.
Why do you think Mariota's taken a step back in year three?
Well, hold on. Let's give Marcus credit, though, okay? He owned it yesterday. He said, I got to be better. He didn't say, my knee hurt.
I would expect nothing less from him.
But I just want to say, I know he's going to get a lot of criticism today, and rightfully so. When you're the quarterback, that's part of it. But he's he is a professional, and he's done the right things. He deserves a lot of credit for that. That being said, he does have to be better. I think the injuries have bothered him. I do think that's a big reason why he hasn't taken a jump. And I also think that the weapons around him have not developed the way I thought they would. I thought you would be, by this time of the season, this was my vision at training camp, that by this time of the season, you would be seeing a little bit more Taywan Taylor, you know, carving out a nice niche as a third down guy in the slot. I thought you would be seeing Corey Davis getting chunks of yardage down the field, being a bigger part of the game plan. Decker is about doing what I thought Decker would be doing. He's catching a ball here and there. He can get that little hitch for you. Delanie Walker's doing exactly what I thought he'd be doing. Rishard Matthews' injury has hurt, but the Jonnu Smith's another guy I thought we'd see a little bit more. But it hasn't come together. There's still time. Still got 3 weeks. Still a lot of football left. But I think the injuries are making it tough to gel. And unfortunately, it hasn't gone their way. Now, Arizona's got a pretty good defense. That's probably a fair statement, right? They got a decent defense.
I think we've gone over that, yes. But you got to win that game.
I agree. You got to win that game. But
they're limited. Everybody knows the makeup of Mariota. I mean, no one's going to question that. We've all said he's a professional. He looks and acts exactly what you want your franchise quarterback to look and act like. No one is ever going to question that. It's not in play. Everybody knows he's a great guy. His teammates love him. Coaches love him. But this is a results business. And in the end, it's going to come down to results. People like Jake Locker, too, when he was here. Right? Everybody liked him. Very likable guy. But this comes down to results. And in the I worry, as you sit here in year three and he's taken a step back, okay. I worry, what is he? Because if he can't run, by the way, if they keep running him, this is what it's going to be. And so I started thinking about this yesterday during the game. Okay, and afterwards. I'm trying to think of the best example of what he might end up being. What if he's Alex Smith? I ask you, Willie Donick, the general manager, is that good enough?
Sure.
So you would take Alex Smith the rest of his.
I think you could do a lot worse, but you would have to give him
$125 million or whatever when his.
Sure.
So that's okay.
It's better than having Jake Locker and some of the other revolving door guys that franchises have. I mean, you can't think that way. You have to hope it's better. Remember, he missed the whole.
It's not about hope. You have to make a tough decision. You have to decide.
There's no decision. It's just a matter of how much you're going to pay him. He's already.
But I'm asking you, if this is what he is, if he is an Alex Smith type, is that okay? Is that good enough?
You just have to build your team that much
for the next 8 years. That's good.
I don't think you have a choice. The alternative of searching for another guy, it's so hard to find that guy in this league. You're stuck with him.
Okay.
Remember, he missed the whole offseason. He had a catastrophic injury.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you cannot discount that. And he's had two, maybe three separate other injuries during the season that have hampered his mobility, maybe his throwing mechanics. I think it makes sense that he has not. And with all the other things around him, I think it's been tougher than we anticipated for him to take the big step forward. Got to be realistic.
We'll come back and head out to the desert. Cameron Wolf is staying with the team. He's covering the Titans for ESPN.com, their reporter. We'll talk about yesterday's game in Arizona. By the way, that was their first trip to that stadium, University of Phoenix Stadium. We'll talk to Cameron Wolf, second hour of 3D, next.